Welcome, 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 y'all. It's another episode of You Missed It! And I think that was the sound of a phantom. I don't know about you guys,
but... That was
but
a ghoulish
that was
woo.
My. That was my woo! You know, I'm a spooky phantom.
I thought that was auto-tune.
Yeah? Oh, it might have been,
oh,
you know?
Okay.
Because I don't see, I don't have the voice.
Featuring Pitbull.
Featuring Pitbull. So today we watched Phantom of the Paradise. It's a 1974 film by Brian De Palma, early De Palma. Came out a couple years after Sisters, which was also a very underrated horror film. This, however, is definitely a musical. It's a lot lighter. Has, like, you know, obviously, like, kind of horror themes and stuff, but it's all done in fun. Like kind of shock rock kind of style. And it's actually it didn't do very well at the box office anywhere except for Winnipeg, where Winnipeg it had such a mass following that it was in theaters for a year and a half, and it was a big reason it went gold in Canada, the soundtrack, I should say. And to this day they have Phantom Palooza like every one or 2 years. They bring the cast up and like crew, and it's like a huge deal in Winnipeg specifically. Anywhere else, nope. You know, you kind of catch it here and there, like random people like myself, but, yeah, it flopped everywhere except for Winnipeg. So go Winnipeg.
That is one of the most unique trivia.
Yep.
I have heard in a while.
Crazy, eh? Yeah, you can watch all the stuff, and they even like perform the songs
and
stuff there.
Was it filmed in Winnipeg or
something? No, not at all.
Like certain cities like Philadelphia or somewhere in Pennsylvania, like they have Blobfest because the Blob was filmed there.
Sure.
So they had like a day, you know, parade or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Winnipeg, that's so random.
No, it has no connection. They just fucking loved
appeal.
It. Yeah. No, exactly.
So it's something in the water in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So I've been through Winnipeg, and that's the only place in Canada I've ever seen Strong Bad advertised.
I love that guy.
What's up with the people in Winnipeg?
Yeah, Winnipeg has got it going on. Strong Bad and Phantom of the Paradise, sign me up.
I drove through Winnipeg earlier this year, and I didn't see any of that.
Yeah.
No. Well, we were only there for like an hour and a bit, but it was so weird.
Anyways, people, so we're on the social medias now.
Yes, we are.
Jack, we're everywhere now. Jack, where can you find us? Where can you find us, Jack?
Well, we're now on Facebook, so you can find us on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is YMI_podcast, and you can also find us on SoundCloud and iTunes. So.
You got that MySpace page up? Got that going?
Who still uses MySpace?
Someone might.
Someone who needs to get on with
it. How about LiveJournal?
LiveJournal?
How about LiveJournal?
Oh, boy.
Who's transcribing
this? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Hey, don't forget to mention Google Plus.
Oh, yeah. You got to shout out to Google.
Yeah,
they
shout out to
everything.
Google Plus. You know, the Facebook killer.
Yeah.
I don't have it on
Google
Plus.
Yeah. Oh, man. Got to watch over that Google Plus.
I'll get right on that.
Anyways, so back to the movie. So yeah, I picked this movie, Phantom of the Paradise, because I just think it's a really crazy, fun kind of movie. It's not specifically like, oh, you need to watch this for Halloween, but you know, they kind of flirt with like certain horror themes. They pay tributes to a few classic films and stuff, but all in all, it's a rock, you know, opera per se, where you kind of combine the elements of Phantom of the Opera with a critique about the music industry. So, man, Brian De Palma just didn't like... the way the music industry was running.
Mm.
Or contracts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. I love the music, which was... Actually, the score was nominated for an Oscar as well. So that was really the only recognition that it got back in the day was that.
What beat it?
Oh, I can't remember.
What movie did this come out again?
74. So it would have been 75 Oscars.
Godfather Part 2 won.
Oh, okay. Well, then that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great one, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, all in all, it's a fun movie. It's crazy. I love the visual style. Like, if there's one word I could describe this movie, vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how I would describe this movie. It's just vibrant throughout, whether it's, like, literal vibrance or just the feel of it. And just everything's, like, just crazy and wacko, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go to my left, and Andrew is the first one up. And what do you think about this crazy...
Well, I was saying before, like, I can see a lot of everybody's pick kind of in their pick, themselves in their pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, like, crazy like you. This is wacko like you.
Wacko Zacko.
About as nuts as you. So I'll say, yeah, this movie is kind of crazy. I didn't know what to expect. Funny enough, I didn't even think much of the title. First, I didn't look at the cover. I didn't anything. I just sat down and it started playing. I'm like, oh, Phantom. Oh.
Yeah.
I think we've all had that moment. Yeah, I had the same moment.
Oh, and rock and roll. This is interesting. Mm. So it was a lot of processing and a lot of it's in your face and all over the place constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves very swiftly through its entire run time. Mm-hmm. Like it goes very fast paced and ends it ends before it gets old, what they're doing, right?
Ends on a climax, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought it was really well done. It was shot really well. I like the energy of the film. I like the visuals. I mm-hmm. love the score, actually. I mm-hmm. thought it was fantastic. That was probably the best part of the movie for mm-hmm. me. It was, the performances were good. It had me laughing. It had some of the horror, imagery a little bit. It's hard to knock it, 'cause it kind of had a little bit of everything in it. I liked it quite a bit. I think I'll just sum up with that. It definitely feels a little it's underrated, because I never ever heard of this movie before.
No, and it didn't make its money back. Well, I mean, it probably did, but
I've maybe. Never been to Winnipeg in my life, so that means
me either.
That nobody from Winnipeg has ever told me to watch this movie.
During Halloween in Winnipeg, everybody dresses up as the Phantom.
That's a great costume. So I kept. Yeah. So the one thing that I will mention, one other thing
That's
I will
true,
mention,
by the way.
Was that I. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Was I kept seeing Marilyn Manson the entire yeah. movie, and it's just something I couldn't separate.
Mm-hmm. There's something about the weak jaw and the black lipstick.
It's black lipstick, the pale makeup. It's just the eyeshadow, everything. Mm. I was just constantly seeing Marilyn Manson.
And the teeth,
and
too,
even with the like voice box, like when he had the voice box and it was like that or whatever, I was kind of like, damn, man, I just can't stop seeing him in this. So that was one thing that was a little distracting for me, but it's me in my own head. Really good, definitely underrated, because never heard of it.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Nobody's heard of it, and I think Brian De Palma in general is underrated. I mean, I could just basically pull up his filmography like every episode and just like boom, 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 boom. Like Blowout is awesome, and you know, Sisters is really good. Like you can just, the only one, Scarface, which is like the big one that everybody knows, but a lot of movies
is Untouchables,
and Carrie too.
Carrie, Untouchables.
He's got definitely hits like As You Go On, even Carlito's Way to
the first
a degree.
Mission Impossible he also
right.
did.
But early in the, like in the 70s, like at least in the first half of his career, and even, you know, later on too, he's got a few as well that it's just like, you should see them, but nobody did, you know? And I think he was also kind of overshadowed by all the greats at the time, like Scorsese and Spielberg and all those guys too, right? So he's the one I find, he's in that pack, but it's like he didn't get the recognition the others got for sure. So, So Alex, two questions. Why do you think this is the best film ever? And why do you think this is the best film ever?
Which one will I answer first?
I'm curious. One or two?
I think you should answer the second one first.
Probably two is better than one.
Warning, foul language ahead. What the fuck? Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting film, that's for damn sure. I looked at the DVD case.
Yeah.
And that gave me a bit of an idea of what to expect. But then directed by Brian De Palma. So looking at his filmography, it didn't quite strike me while I was watching the film that this was directed by Brian De Palma.
Really?
Yeah, because he takes on more serious themes, I think. Although I can see his criticism of the music industry in this film, it had a wild and crazy way about it, which I really liked. I mean, some of the camera shots were awesome.
Oh, awesome.
Especially when Winslow breaks out of prison and he goes back to Swan's office. That was great.
Yeah.
That reminded me, the shot where he's running into Winslow's office and the camera's going behind him, that reminded me of some of the shots from, I think it's U571.
Oh, yeah.
Where the camera's following the guys from one end of the sub to the other. Just that crazy rocking shot. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
It's just like crazy raw handheld, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is.
But I love it.
Yeah. And this came out in 74.
74.
Was Rocky Horror Picture Show before?
That was the year after.
It was after.
I clearly took inspiration from probably the stage, though, because, I mean, there were stage productions and stuff of it before the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Of Rocky Horror?
Yeah.
Yes, there was.
So I think it took inspiration from that, but it was the movie was before Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Wow.
So that's the other thing. That's why I think it also got buried by that, too, because, like, some reason Rocky Horror kind of built and built and built and built as it went along, whereas Phantom just kind of, like, died right away.
It died, but it still threw a lot in your face. I mean... Watching it, halfway through I realized I gotta watch it again because there's so much in there. Mm-hmm. And of course, from De Palma, he's gonna throw a lot of stuff in there. So you gotta go through it probably a few more times, at least I do.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer both of your questions, it's the best film because it's entertaining. It was made in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And the 70s was like raw and they were throwing stuff in your face. If you watch some of the TV shows from the 70s, it's like they get in your face. The actors, some of the actors at that time, they would really yell at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just, oh, we got to build this up for entertainment. They were really angry with each other, like seriously angry. And some of that rawness you can see in this film, like the shots. Some of the acting, it was a little bit over the top in some shots, but it does help to make the point, like the criticism of the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that figured into it. But, you know, with going over the top with the acting, it's like De Palma was trying to kill off rock and roll operas because he was just throwing it out there.
Right.
Yeah. So... that's part of why it's the greatest film of all time.
It's solid. I mean, I've seen it a couple times now, and every time it just kind of puts a smile on your face, especially when like Beef shows up. That's where the meat really comes in for this movie.
It's the main course of the film.
The main course enters. And
you
then
telling
you're
me you like beef?
Oh, you know it. You know it.
All right.
Oh, did anybody catch all the bird stuff, by the way, in this movie?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, you have two characters named Swan and Phoenix. Yeah. You have the Dead Death Records logo, which is a dead sparrow or something. And the Phantom's mask is an owl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's also, like, the dancers towards the end, too, are also, like, crows, I guess, or something, too.
Yeah, they had, like, a very, like...
as well, and it's kind of...
Victoria's Secret...
And it's kind of cool, too, because, like, I think a lot of it also, you know, it's almost like the label's a bird, so they're, like, kind of pushing it, like, constantly in your face. Like, oh, this is the label. Like, and they keep playing, like, the songs by, like, Juicy Fruits and stuff. It's kind of like in the Lego movie where everything is awesome.
Awesome.
And they keep, like, playing it and playing it and playing it, and it's like, oh, they love it. It's popular. That's, like, keep throwing it out there and doing it over and over and over.
Bubblegum Pop. That's what the Juicy Fruits were all about. Then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what that's getting through.
Yeah.
Oh, Juicy Fruit, of course, you know, is a gum, so it's
easy to, you know, to chew. And
yeah, it's easy to chew on, yeah, for sure.
I was going to say it's digest, but you're not supposed to eat gum, but kids don't listen like myself.
Yeah, no. But it's the gum that's going to move you.
That's true.
That's right.
It's going to go in your stomach, and then you're going to be upset.
Until all the flavor goes away.
Yeah.
I love that there's a Simpsons episode. I don't think it was Juicy Fruit, but Bart was basically like, they was gone. They was gone.
Like I remember that. That was a good one. Yeah. God, yeah.
But anyways, what does Jack think of the Phantom in the Paradise, or of the Paradise, or within the Paradise, and why is this your favorite movie?
Well, it's clearly my favorite movie because, you know, it's Brian De Palma and he's my man, you know.
Yeah, he's your man,
He's not my favorite movie already. And you know what? He just knocked that out of the park. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
This movie was insane. I'm still trying to dissect it because there's just so much happening. There's times where I'm focusing on the craft of it, which I'll start with that first, how it was put together. Visually, the shots were just awesome.
Yeah.
Like, how it was shot, you know, you can I will disagree with Alex on saying about how you didn't see it being he didn't look like a Brian De Palma film.
Yeah.
And I think it looked like the most Brian De Palma film I've seen.
The split screen.
Yeah. And the one thing you got to look at for with Brian De Palma is that he is a complete Hitchcockian filmmaker. Oh, yeah. So all those shots that were, you know, all those layered shots where, you know, you're zooming in and the wide angle, actually the wide angle shots almost was reminiscent of Kubrick a little bit with like Clockwork Orange, you know, with
the one you're talking about.
Yeah, where he runs into the office and all that. I thought there was a little bit of inspiration there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, just how like, you know, the close-ups, the focus pulls and all that, just how he frames a shot and how he directs it was really well done. And yeah, the cinematography was great. The only negative I can say about The Craft, that kind of, it wasn't all the way through, but I thought at times the editing was a little weak and awkward.
Oh, okay.
At times. Not during the musical performances. I thought that's where it was the strongest. And one thing about this movie, which may have had its most influence, I think, is on music videos, because this almost felt like a, like one of those, an early, like, version of what music videos would become in the 80s.
Right.
You know, they're literally looking into the camera and singing to you, or, you know, like the main guy is giving you like the prologue or the backstory right to you, almost like a documentary. And when they are looking at the camera and just how big it was and the montages of like the progress of being a music being made and all that, it wasn't, you didn't see that in 50s musicals or even in the 60s. When musicals were, you know, you had like Singing in the Rain and all that, those were edited very conventionally. And with this one, they got really creative with it, which I thought was pretty cool. And yeah, I can definitely see, like, because that was just when, you know, music videos were starting to come. You know, the Beatles did a little bit in the 60s that were kind of, you know, a little bit ahead of its time, but it didn't take off. And then right after that, the next year of Phantom of the Paradise was Queen's A Night at the Opera.
Yeah.
And if you remember that music video and how that kind of took off, and there's almost a little bit of, in terms of lighting and the pacing and all that, and the rock opera of it.
Right, right.
And yeah. I only really have one other negative thing to say about this movie. And I'm probably going to be an extreme minority in this.
Yeah.
I thought the songs were meh.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the music was good. Like the score. I thought the score was great.
Yeah.
The songs?
The performances by the actors when they were on camera, I thought helped elevate the music for the most part. I thought the visuals were striking and it was eye candy with music that it didn't really hook me in as much.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I actually think that's kind of why it's a little underrated.
Uh-huh.
Say, compared to Rocky Horror Picture Show. Rocky Horror Picture Show, like, music is extremely quotable, memorable, and catchy as hell. I can't recall a single line of in a song for this movie. Nothing really hooked me in.
I agree.
I agree with that.
So I the music didn't really do much for me in terms of the songs, but the performances and the execution of the visuals. That's what helped elevate it for me. So whenever the songs were going on, I got bored.
Oh, okay.
Except for Beef.
The songs were all meant to be representations of a style, or they weren't meant to be like, from what I could tell, they weren't meant to be catchy, like, quotable songs. They were meant to just represent a genre, something like that. So it's meant to be like, oh, this is nostalgic or whatever, right? Juicy Fruits. This is a style. And as long as for me, the songs nailed the style. Like you could like move your head up and down to the song. You didn't have to listen to the lyrics because I don't think they were meant to have any substance. The whole point is they were taking what his substance and what he had written and kind of, you know, diluting it with by having these guys sing it in this catchy way or this style or that style. So I don't think that's a knock on the film, really.
I'll finish my point quickly before we move on to Rylan. But the one thing, just to answer your question, your point, Andrew. excuse me. I definitely did see all, like, I don't think the songs were bad, and I get why they were there, and I did see the... This was definitely De Palma's, you know, response to the music industry at the time.
Yeah.
You know, you saw, like, Beef was definitely Led Zeppelin Robert Plant at times, you know, especially when he's just strutting it on stage.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the kind of the yeah.
That's Robert Plant all the way, and just even how he was going, like that's all the way right there.
But
and
it's like an extreme version. Yeah, oh, of it's him, an
extreme
though.
Version.
It's
and then yeah. I like the one part I really loved in terms of representing the styles of music was when he Swan was sitting in the middle of his. I loved his vinyl desk.
Yes,
that was great. Cool. And he would just rotate between different persons until he landed on Beef. Mm-hmm. And you see like Country, and then you see like the Supremes, mm-hmm. and then you see, you know, the Carpenters or mm-hmm. something like that, and it keeps going. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it was just all style, but the songs themselves I didn't think had much weight to them, and that it didn't do much to me. I know what they were doing, but I just didn't think they were that great to begin with.
I actually really like the songs. I mean, it might just be me, but like I like this style more than I guess you did too.
Yeah, like lyrics don't always like lyrics matter. I'll mm-hmm. agree with that.
Yeah.
Lyrics do matter, substance does matter, but a lot of the times the substance always doesn't need to be in the lyrics themselves. A lot of times you can have substance in your music.
Yep.
If you've created interesting music. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's another thing, right? And I think that they created interesting music rather than just interesting lyrics. Although I will admit, I did think what Phantom wrote for like the lyrics he wrote were pretty interesting. Actually, I enjoyed that
during his piano, the one that he was singing in the beginning.
Well, because he was doing it in a style where it was emphasizing it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I will say I was so distracted by the terrible dubbing of that scene though.
Yeah, it's a little.
It was a bit. It kind of did take
me out just a little bit. And I did. I think in the credits it did say this song was sung by somebody else.
That was a different song though. I think I don't know if it was that one, but it probably. Well, actually, I don't know if he. I can't remember now specifically if he did it or someone else did. Shit. But no, I think it was a different song because I remember the point in the credits that you saw. I think it was the Beef song is what came up, actually.
That would make sense, too.
Yeah. It was, I'm pretty sure it was the Beef song in the credits.
Yeah,
because it was sung by Ray something.
Yeah, because when you first see him, he's terrible. And then all of a sudden he becomes like...
Really good.
Okay, where did that come from?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Beef is a man of many talents, okay?
What was that?
I said Beef is a man of many talents.
He is. So. He brings the beef.
I like beef.
And last but not least, we got Rylan. And what does Rylan think? And is this her favorite musical or her least favorite musical of all time?
Oh, you give her a negative option?
Yeah, but it's extremes. It's extremes.
Well, I brought in the most negativity so far. So I guess, you know.
He opened the door.
I opened
Jack's
the door.
Fault.
Yeah, it is my fault.
Well, I'm not going to be as negative about it as Jack. I think the movie was a blast.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun. Kind of like Alex, like I sneaked a peek at the DVD cover and like, yeah, this is basically like the Phantom of the Opera meets not film noir so much as like film neon, if that makes any sense. But it's kind of like, it's like you were saying, it's so vibrant with its visuals, especially the primary colors, the red, yellows, and blues are emphasized so much. But both through the camera work and the score, it kind of plays with a lot of different like period pieces. I find like there's some elements of like the prison escape scene. It was totally like a silent film with the way that it was cut and with the way that the score was going in the background. There's scenes where he's creeping around the mansion and it's shot like it is like an 18th century like period piece. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just plays with a lot of these different elements, different from different times and different genres, and the songs were not my favorite part either, but more in pertinence to the pacing of the film.
Oh, okay.
I found it made it a little bit clunky because in a typical musical, when a musical number happens, it's to explain about a character or a situation or to advance the plot in some way. Mm-hmm. This movie just kind of, I mean, when the characters start singing, I mean, it's prompted because it's a film about the music industry, but at the same time, the film kind of just stops for like 3-4 minutes to just have a song.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that was like, and like Jack said, the performers made it engaging. The camera work during and the blocking during those scenes was good. So I'm like, okay, I don't mind that I just watched that. But it was like, okay, so that happened. That's all right. And now we get back to the movie. So oh, okay. it almost felt a little bit more like a detour from what was actually going on for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So basically, you guys were kind of bothered by the fact that it wasn't like, I guess, a traditional musical where
not
it's like
so
Sweeney Todd, where it's kind of like
snippets.
It's kind of like it's
no,
explaining
can,
the story.
I mean, I admit I do like that format, but I don't feel like you have to be limited to it. But in this instance, I just don't. I don't know. It just kind of felt kind of a start and stoppy to me, if that makes any sense.
No, definitely.
Like I said, the songs and performances were done well. There are some good vocalists, some good camera work. But I mean, yeah, it was just a little awkward. It felt a little clunky at times.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. That was a, they just, at times they kind of slowed it down, the movie. Like there was the one that I thought really slowed down the movie the most was, when Phoenix was singing,
to Swan
and also to the Phantom, That went on for like it had like three camera setups and it kept holding on one for a while and it just slowed it down. And then when you compare it to other scenes where it's just that it's energy, the movie, the scenes are cutting from one to the other with these interesting transitions or pan wipes or whatever, and it kept the energy going. And then when this starts singing, it stops, it just slows down, and it just kind of messes with the pacing of the movie, which was just this, you know, cathartic ride, just and then we got to sing now. And like I said, the only time it really worked in terms of like it didn't slow the pacing down, it actually really worked, was the Beef song. That whole opening was awesome. Like that was the best in terms of song, performance, everything. That was great.
Yeah, maybe if they made it so that not every song was its entire length and you could kind of play with our attention spans a little bit so that by the time it gets to the bigger, bigger kind of more visually... visually enticing imagery that our attention spans kind of aren't already spent. It's like, instead of being like, oh, another one of these, it maybe engages you a little bit more as by having just 1 or 2 minute sequences before. So maybe they could have just been shortened.
Well, I think the ones with Phoenix too, the fact that you were saying weren't really cutting much and stuff. I think obviously the focus is kind of on her though, because the Phantom wants, you know, her to sing, her to be kind of the main person singing, right? So I think maybe that's the reason why they kind of like held on shots a while and stuff. It's to, you know, they're watching her kind of thing.
But it had the same almost routine in terms of how they filmed it with almost every song. Usually when it was like a, like the one that did a 360 around the Phantom in the beginning of the movie. Like even that was like, okay, let's, maybe we can get going. It just, because how everything else was building up to it, especially with the opening number is just a blast. It just gets you going and you want to go, and then the second song just kind of screeches everything to a halt.
Yeah,
and at that point I'm just like, okay, am I gonna still like this movie? That actually was the first time I went,
oh really,
was it I just felt it just felt awkward. It's the first time I felt the editing was a bit awkward at times too. It's just, yeah, Ryan put it great, it just felt a little clunky at certain points, like wasn't really well polished, and I felt that for certain songs, like I said, certain other songs, like the one where he's writing and you see like the musical, like sheet music inserted on the screen and all that,
yeah,
like, all that stuff was great. But yeah, like I said, about most of the songs it didn't hook with me.
It didn't prevent me from enjoying it, obviously.
No, same here.
But I feel like if the songs aren't going to provide some exposition, create a specific mood, or advance the plot in some way, that a lot of them could have been a little bit more concise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think for me, and maybe for the others here, I don't know, but I just kind of had fun hanging out. And I mean, I guess I liked the music enough where I was hooked in, where I didn't really care about...
You experience it for 3 minutes or whatever, right? The length of the song is that it's like a vignette. It's like you feel like it's its own thing, right? And it kind of transports you somewhere. That's what music does, right? So it brings, so every time, like the Juicy Fruits playing, it brought me to that kind of, that era, that style of music. It brought me to it. I was getting flashbacks to different things. I was remembering different acts every time I would hear a different song. And I think that that's what they were trying to do. And I thought it was effective.
I think the visuals had a lot more help with that. I think the visuals really strengthened a lot of those
you can tell
songs.
By the music too,
yeah, I was
though.
Gonna say
yeah but like, still like to me it just
like imagine having that Juicy Fruits section but they were playing like like beef style music or something. Yeah. It would just clash. It wouldn't work at all. No. Like, no, but you need that to bring you in. Like, you, it helps more than you think.
And it makes sense with the story, right? Too, how they're like a nostalgia act. And
yeah. No,
like, well, yeah, they're kind of, because it's kind of implied that they're like on the way, on the way out.
Yeah. Well, they even like, they had the surfer music.
The intro established that too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt, and like having the surfer music in there as well. And
yeah,
I like the shock rock and the
when that was all, awesome.
Yeah. That was great, and then seeing like all the things you can kind of catch, you know, with the makeup, like this movie came out just a year after Kiss, so you can sort of see the makeup inspiration there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
the backdrop is clearly like inspired by German expressionism films, like the Cabinet Dr. Caligari and all that. Which is really cool. So, like I said, visually, I think this movie, you could almost watch it as a silent movie.
And you could.
Get this, you can get the whole thing across. It's funny, I kind of wrote this in quotation, like, this is actually technically the original Phantom of the Opera musical. You know, because the Andrew Lloyd Webber one came out in, like, 86 or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so this predates the musical.
By quite a bit.
That's funny.
By over a decade. So yeah,
maybe he was like, yeah.
Yeah. He beat him to the punch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think this is a really fun movie, as I said before, though. I mean, I personally really like the music and everything. And I don't know if anybody had any other points.
Well, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
What films do you think would be made better by an addition of the beef character?
Jesus. All movies. Justice for All.
And I was going to say, dude, actually, good answer. Because if he came up in the courtroom, if he was the judge.
He was the judge. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, man. Beef, I'm going to kill judge. Myself today.
Oh, that'd be great, actually.
That'd be pretty good. It would just be like, wait, what? And why is there a musical number here? Like, I mean, hey, it's like only a few years later. Maybe that's where he ended up. It's like it didn't work out, but he'd still be a judge, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Judge Beef.
Judge Beef.
I'm a big fan of the name, too. I mean, the fact that he's called Beef is great. Like, that's just a great, great stage name, you know? You know what it is, too? It's obviously a comparison, I think. And I don't know if I have my dates right here or not, but Meatloaf.
I was gonna
seem that way. His singing style.
It seems like a parody of that.
I don't know if Meatloaf was prominent around that time.
But when did Bat Out of Hell come out?
After Rocky Horror.
Was it
really
late 70s?
Yeah,
I'm trying to think because I feel like I just think that's such a funny parody. Unless he had like something before.
I want to say 77 was Bat Out of Hell.
I can't remember. Because if it was before, then you goddamn well know that that was a parody.
You're
of
right, it is 77.
Did he have anything else before?
Oh, probably.
Like that was...
Like, the fact that he got Rocky Horror, I think.
That oh, was... yeah, I never thought. He's so, in that.
Yeah, he's in that.
Oh, well, then I'm saying it is, then. It's definitely got to be a parody.
But I don't know if he was, like, that big enough where it would catch... It'd be worth parodying compared to all the other artists that they were parodying in that movie. Like, I don't think Meatloaf was Meatloaf until Bat Out of Hell.
I don't know. I mean, Bat Out of Hell was obviously his big, big one, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah, if he had music before and stuff like that, I think he still would have been known in the circuit. Like, you know what I mean? And I think if they were preparing this movie, if they were in Hollywood, which I think it was filmed. I could be wrong about that, too, but I think it was filmed in Hollywood as well. You know, then it very well could be. And I just think Beef is perfect to just be like, oh, it's like this really raw, manly voice and stuff.
Yeah.
Beef. I just think it's hilarious. So
he was working on Bat Out of Hell for a long time, though, prior to that.
Yeah.
Like early 70s. So apparently it was like this big drawn out process.
But was it in public? Like, did
he had a couple of albums publicly, out before? Yeah, like,
that's
smaller,
what I thought.
Yeah.
So he was in the public eye prior to that. And it was pretty well known. He was working on something from what I could tell.
But yeah, I guess my question is like, would they have known of Meatloaf like with the music back then? Because if they did, then that's definitely
I'm
a
pretty
reference.
Sure, because he was in theater before.
He was,
right?
Yeah,
so,
but I think it's a little bit of a stretch. Like even me bringing up Kiss, there's no way they reference Kiss. They were more referencing Alice Cooper.
Yes.
It's just it's more
that's
of a,
what I got
it's more
that.
Of a coincidence that the makeup just happens to look a little similar.
Yeah.
Because again, Kiss didn't become big until the following year once they released their Alive album.
Live, yeah.
So this movie was kind of prophetic in a way.
Yeah, maybe predicted
it,
things.
It did, yeah.
That's
kind of
cool.
It kind of did. There was a lot of images of like, wow, they're referencing this, but what they're referencing didn't happen for another five or mm-hmm. something years. Mm-hmm. It was kind of eerie at times.
Like
there's some, like the rock opera is very Queen-esque, and again, Queen wasn't Queen until the following year. So it's kind of crazy how, like, he almost was predicting how the rock scene would actually continue. Which is cool.
I wanted to go back to something you had said about the beginning of the film, and I'm gonna start it with what Andrew was saying about the juicy fruits. And when you watch that opening scene with them, it brought me back to watching clips of bands from the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah,
like that kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like someone was saying, that style was on its way out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then you were talking about, Jack, about when after the Juicy Fruits had their song, then it goes to Winslow and he's doing his song. And that goes on for like 3 minutes, and it's a 360 around him. But I think there's a good reason that the filmmakers did that. The film is propelled by Winslow's music.
Mm-hmm.
So when Swan takes his music and changes it, that to me was a reference to white music producers taking black artists' songs and colorizing it, like Zeppelin or Presley. So, like you were saying, it's a critique of the music industry.
Yeah.
And those are just a few examples of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much more. Like I said, you got to see it a few times. There's,
Well, it's not even just like with the music industry in terms of contracts and music rights. It's also the performers themselves. You see how it's all about the image, not about the actual talent.
And they say that in the film.
They flat out say that many times. And more than just the Phantom example, it's also Phoenix as well. They're not all hot on her until the Phantom basically says...
Forces her in.
Yeah, pretty much. And then they're like, oh, we can turn her into this image. You know, we can mold what we want. And yeah, just that the... And the deal with the devil and all that is just like... It's so figurative, like when for music artists, it's like you're signing all your rights away.
Yeah, I feel like the moral of this story is don't bleed around a contract.
You prick your finger you're signing like a regular old employment contract. You're like, shit, now it's for real.
Yeah, and they're bleeding you dry throughout the
contract. Oh, God, I can never quit now. Oh, my God.
That part was great. I was like, when he killed himself, I actually was like, well, that was... Oh, wait, what?
I'm like, wait, oh, what?
That was so crazy. Okay.
Like, it seems too early for this beat.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? I should have seen that coming too, because they were saying his whole music
it was
is about
in the contract. It was, dude.
But even the song,
it said, like, it's about the devil. Yeah, shit, and I was like, wait, this is weird.
Like they say it many times, so it's like, oh, I should.
Well, it's Faust, right? Yeah. I mean, that is the story. Yeah, so it's you know, it's a classic story.
Nobody ever references that unless it turns out that's what the story is actually going to be about.
Pretty much, yeah.
What do you guys think about? I'm not sure. Maybe a little 1984, but the surveillance, that was a big motif in this movie. The cameras everywhere.
They're in the background all the time, too, and you can hear it go,
yeah.
And it's like, it's over.
And I'm just trying to think, for that time, what are they trying... That's the only part.
I think you might be reading a little.
Maybe
it's more the music industry again. They want to lock on all the music at all times.
Yeah, or or even like the devil's watching kind of thing, because like he was always, it was him watching, right?
Swan. I actually think that's probably it. Actually,
yeah, you know, like because the devil's like this overarching kind of character. You know, he's there kind of manipulating everything. Mm-hmm. So that's I feel like that's. He's the cameras, right? In a way. And he's kind of like manipulating everything. Swan kind of represents that because he's the direct connection, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think it was like, no, like 1984 and stuff like that. I don't think that surveillance was as big. Like it was an issue at the time, obviously, but it's not as prevalent as it was.
Yeah, that's like, why I was bringing up. I was like, I didn't think of it as 1984. I just brought that up as an example of that's why I was trying to wonder what, if there was anything.
That would be my guess.
Well,
yeah.
I think with the TVs, too, I think that was just an opportunity, as I said in the movie, for Brian De Palma to not just do split screen, but to do quadruple screen.
Oh, that split screen scene actually was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, isn't it great?
That whole split screen, I was like, it keeps going. Yeah. And then how it finished, I was like, Okay, that was great.
Yeah, that I really liked that scene,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, just a quick side. I feel like I have to give minus points to this movie because De Palma directed it.
Yeah. Well, I was just about to say, this is a prequel to Scarface because, you know, the main character and Swan got scarred faces.
They all got their faces messed up, two characters had scarred faces.
Yeah, scarred faces.
Yeah, yeah, that should be the sequel, you know. Yeah.
It could be the sequel, but it came
Alien,
out.
Alien, aliens, Scarface, Scarfaces.
Scarfaces, yeah, and Swans.
All the faces scarred up.
You could have Swans.
I constantly brought up Swans. I was like, yeah, this is, because, I don't know, it's just, I'd seen the band, so I kind of felt like, yeah, I don't know. I just made some connections. I'm not even going to get into it. I'm not going to get into it, but like it was making some connections to me, so I kept thinking swans, man.
Swans. Yeah.
Swans.
How do you make a sequel better? You just multiply the villain. That's all you do. You just multiply him.
Swans.
It's kind of like Matrix, what was it? Matrix Reloaded. You just have 100 Agent Smiths instead of just one.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they should have called it Matrixes.
Sure. Actually, I like that.
It'll just pluralize everything.
Is it Matrixes or Matrix I?
Matrix Eye, because like it's that. More fun. No, Matrix Eye has to be the third one.
Sure. And it all takes place in your eye.
Or like Matrix Triple X and Matrix.
Oh.
There's a crossover.
That's
or
a good
Cube.
One.
You know?
I like that.
Cube.
Yeah.
Cube's a good one.
Yeah,
like Cube could be on the show, honestly.
What, Cube?
Yeah, I like Cube.
Okay. no, like Cube's fine.
It's
but,
fun.
Like, really?
I think it's fun.
I haven't seen it.
It's so underrated. Like,
well,
dude,
I wouldn't. Okay, I wouldn't
it has
say
a cult
it's
cult following. Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
I mean, well, it's not huge though. The cult following.
It deserves its cult following, but I don't think it deserves.
Well,
more than
okay,
that.
Yeah, I didn't say it was a fantastic movie, but it is a lot of fun. I mean, just the concept, and you guys haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
I've seen
okay,
Cube.
Okay, so
I
you know
it was
about
great.
It. Yeah, I was gonna say.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting. It's cool concept, but like, yeah, dude, it's not like that underrated. I because it has a decent cult following. Like, look, okay, you've seen it, I've seen it, Zach has seen it. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't watch it together, man.
No.
We've all seen it at different times separately. Yeah. It's gotten its due.
But it's a Canadian movie. I mean, it was a low budget. It came out, you know, and it was in festivals, but it didn't really go. Like, yeah, people have kind of caught it here and there, but we're way off track right
now. Yeah, I was just going to say, how the hell did Cube come up?
So, Phantom of the Paradise.
/ Cube.
If it was in a cube, what songs would they play?
Help. I need somebody. Help. You know what? I can relate it. You know, every band, different band that came in and played those sections was like another room in the cube.
Exactly.
That's true. You know,
boom.
Yeah, nicely done, Andrew.
Different trap. Yeah.
Thank you.
Golf clap.
Thank you.
Not worthy enough for a real clap.
Just like what Swan did in the
beginning.
This
is what we need a sound effects board for.
Oh, fuck. Swan's face bugged me. I don't know about you guys, but just...
It was a mixture of
fuck
Tom
him,
Petty
right?
and Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just wanted to... You just, like... He had such a punchable face, man. Like, he's one of those guys that...
He's
they did
really
a damn
short
good
too.
Job of making him a villain because it was like, fuck, dude, I can't handle this guy. And I this is not a knock against who I'm going to reference right now, but, like, I kept, like, thinking Elton John constantly.
Oh, that makes sense.
Constantly. But yeah. I don't want to punch Elton John. I very much like Elton John.
That might be more with the glasses and all.
Yeah, the look. That was more the look, right? Less the face and everything like that, like the expressions and stuff. But it was definitely, like, the way he was put together.
Mm.
So I kept seeing Elton John when I saw him, which was interesting, actually. Mm. I thought it was kind of neat.
Elton Swan.
I don't know. I kept seeing that's kind of weird that I wasn't purposely making these connections to people in the music industry, but I kept seeing these people, Marilyn Manson the Phantom,
Rammstein
like, with what? That like dude. No, because okay,
I get it. But
so there's a section in the movie where they're
like cutting people up.
Yeah, they're like it's like shock rock style stuff, and but the lead singer had this. Mike that was also like a knife.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the bottom half of it was a knife. That's a very Rammstein thing.
Yeah,
he basically sharpens a knife that's his mic on the bottom in his live performances.
Yeah.
And all that stuff that was happening during that performance was very like very reminiscent of a Rammstein show, or at least part of it.
You should see Alice Cooper.
Well, it's all it is. It's just like shock rock, where it is today and where it was. And Alice Cooper was kind of the guy.
Well, he had a guillotine on stage.
Yeah, he was hugely influential. And that's where Rammstein. Well,
I made that connection because I didn't see Alice Cooper live. So I make the connection because it relates to something that I've seen.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. So, well, it's more modern too.
I know that Rammstein is obviously. They're the next evolution of these things, right? So that's why I made that connection, because I wasn't going to shows then, obviously. I was too young. So,
well, I saw Alice Cooper a couple years ago.
Yeah, well,
he's still fantastic, by the way. If you do get to see him, just a reference, like, he can still sing, perform. He still does the guillotine and everything. Like, nice. It's awesome. He opened for Motley Crue, and he was like way better, actually. Just my two cents.
I apologize to the audience. It's pronounced guillotine, but whatever.
I know, right? I was like, he listens to Death Grips. That's a band that literally has a song called Guillotine where he just screams it.
Did I say guillotine?
And then he sang the song before. Zach, you've sang the song before, and you say guillotine. So I was like, what's wrong with you?
Just blaming on me being from the East Coast, and I don't know. Jack doesn't have an excuse.
No, I'm just terrible at English.
But yeah, I'll just say I'm from the East Coast.
Guillotine. I think he's having a stroke.
I should have said that.
Guillotine.
Guillo time?
That's how it's basically spelled.
Guillotine?
Yeah, it's time. G-U, right? Yeah.
Guillotine.
Sounds like something you put in your car.
Guillotine.
Got that guillotine. Put it in my car, it goes.
Welcome to Off Topic, the podcast.
Jesus, yeah.
Damn, this movie's getting us everywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get us to Winnipeg.
Well, the movie was everywhere.
Totally, man.
Like, get us to Winnipeg eventually.
I think we just disagree on the music, to be honest.
I think that's what it is.
Music, and I think they kind of laid into a bit of pacing issues, because I brought up editing, and Ryan brought up some of the songs were like, you know, in terms of the overall how the movie was put together.
It's good music. They didn't use it to its full potential.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just a difference of opinion, too, because, I mean, I can see why they did that intentionally, too. Like going off of what you were saying, like how, you know, it's when it's on Winslow and stuff, like he was the main person and then, you know, Swan takes it away. And that's why I was focusing on him. I think that performance is so soulful, too, right?
Yeah.
It has a lot of heart into it. And I think that's why it focuses on it so long, because it's kind of like, okay, it's just like raw, right? It's like you're seeing somebody in a coffee, you know, shop or performing or something, which I really liked. And it's that kind of song, too. But then, of course, he then takes it and progresses it into really crazy,
like produces the hell out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Overproduces it.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of artists who are just starting out, they put everything they have into their music.
Yeah.
And then along comes the big old music machine. They take it and they pop it.
Yeah.
Which is sad. And there was something about that, and I can't exactly remember. Oh, with the music itself, the shock rock performance.
Right.
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah. Mm.
But it was all style, no substance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm.
And with the actual soulful songs, you don't remember much of the lyrics, but there's meaning in there. It's quite the difference from, I'm trying to flesh this out, you know, when it's a really catchy pop song, they've got a few lyrics that rhyme and they sound good. And you can repeat them over and over in your head. But then, lyrics that have meaning. Yeah. Like, it's so hard to write a good song.
Yeah.
And there's not always one line you can point to that's a really catchy pop lyric. Like, you got to put the whole thing together. And that's what the music industry at the time, I think, was doing, was just taking little bits, like a line or two here and there. Oh, let's repeat this over and over. It's just like the commercials. Where they have the line, plop, plop, fizz, fizz, oh, what a relief it is. Stuff like that. You remember it.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah. It's just the style, not the substance.
Well, it's just like the movie, too. I mean, he has the whole cantata, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's this big piece and stuff like that. Whereas, like, if he did it, it would be kind of like a little similar to what he was doing. Obviously, a little different to, you know, work with a theater or something. But with, you know, obviously Swan takes it and then he like cuts it up into little bits. Like, here's a single kind of thing, right?
And he, if Swan didn't take it, the artist who wrote it would have done it slower, like Phoenix did. That, I think that's why the shot with Phoenix right after the Shock Rock performance took so long, and it was like only one or two shots, because they really want you to listen and hold your attention. I think it makes sense to slow the pace right down and just focus on her for one shot so you can listen to her. And all your attention is on her, and you listen to what she's saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll make one correction there. I was more referencing the song she was singing during the audition, not her actual main performance on stage.
Okay.
I thought the her first one where she's auditioning, that's the one I felt dragged. But the one that she was on stage performing for the audience, no, that was, in terms of the tone of the movie, that fit better. Showing the extremes and how the audience was more attached to the actual talent than just this overproduced, you know, circus.
What they really want.
Yeah, what they really want. And, you know, seeing that you can almost make a you know, a mixture of the two, what they realize. But, yeah, no, I just wanted to clarify that. What other performances besides, we keep talking about Beef, but I think it was just more how outrageous and, you know, entertaining he was. But, you know, you had mentioned that some of them were a bit over the top. I would almost consider them a little bit, you know, to use the pun, operatic at times.
Yeah.
Particularly with the main guy. But what other, you know, since you have the most acting experience here on this table, which other performance do you think stood out as, say, good, or do you feel like, you know, they kind of were serviceable at most?
I'd probably have to come back to me on that one, because there were a lot of little moments that stood out that made sense, but it's hard to pick those out between the big over-the-top moments and all the cut shots and the fast pace. Like, I'd have to watch it again and do a commentary during it.
Which would be fun, actually, with this movie, to be honest.
Like, yeah, because it goes that fast.
Yeah, it does. It's and there's, like, tons of things happening. Yeah, and I like that. I like a fast pace. It's also not a long movie. It's, like, 92 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a pretty brisk pace for a short movie to begin with.
I thought it was interesting just because, like, to kind of build off of what you were saying before, Alex, it's interesting that they took his whole cantata and kind of like split it up into these songs, right? These, and then like even earlier that henchman, that like Italian henchman guy, who's like, "Song's a song. What do you mean, cantata? What the heck is this?"
It's
right
there in the bleacher seat.
And he's just like, it's just and even before when he was actually taking the music from him at the beginning, and he was even saying like, what are you talking about? It's just like a song's a song. It's either catchy or it isn't, or people like it or they don't, that kind of thing. And I think that's interesting. You do compare it to the music industry. Even now, people tend to focus more on the repetition and the catchy song. So less nowadays, where like the days of like the vinyl record, or where people would listen through an entire record, the iTunes of music, right? They're like what iTunes did to music, where you just get a song you really like, or you'll get that top charted song. I mean, that was happening before iTunes, but like the idea of a single, and this is, you just listen to this, whereas it was meant to be listened to it, like in the past, where artists would focus on entire albums as a complete work, something that was meant to be listened to from start to finish and told a whole story. And now it's just a collection of singles.
So playlists.
And I think that was, and it was, and that's a critique of that. I feel like the whole movie did a really good job of critiquing that, because that's exactly what they did. They took his cohesive whole and split it into these singles that are one-offs and totally different from each other, you know? So it was kind of interesting.
I was actually going to mention that. I forgot to mention that. I was going to say exact same thing. You know, it's kind of like Pink Floyd,
like the
right?
Death of the concept album.
Like, I mean, they still exist, but nobody, you know, they don't really promote it that way. Like Pink Floyd is like, I think one of them where it's like, oh, you got to listen to the whole album. You know what I mean? But they don't. They they put them out in singles on the radio, you know, money, stuff like that. They throw those singles out, but like, you never hear like the whole album. They're never like, we're going to play the whole album.
Radio stations like never do that.
Well, no, they're the ones who helped kind of turn the industry that way.
That
right?
too.
So, but I mean, like, look at like Kendrick Lamar.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
His album. Look at what is most popular with him.
Yeah.
It's his albums that have the best singles. But you take like the best, one of the best cohesive holes in To Pimp a Butterfly, and that's like you got to listen to the whole damn thing, or else you're missing out.
The connection between each song, but literally,
the only things that were popular on that were the catchy ones, King Kunta, things like that, right? So that's the only thing that would. Even though he had intended you to listen to the entire album all at once, but no, that I mean, his most popular stuff is albums where it's not as cohesive.
Yeah,
it's a little more different throughout the album, right? It changes back and forth, and I think that's happened to a lot of artists, and it's hard for them to succeed if they want you to listen to the whole album, because that takes a level of patience and time that people aren't willing to give.
Yeah, the battle between art versus commercialism is always a fine line to play, because you go too far to one side, well, then, you know, you become accused of being a sellout, and your music, you know...
Well, some meld it pretty well. Yeah, I got to admit, some artists do a good job of managing to do both. I'm not saying that you have to be on one side or the other.
No, you don't.
You don't need to be avant-garde.
Yeah.
You know, you can be, like... You can be somewhere in the middle. You can be
that's why it's that
commercially
fine line.
Successful, and you can also be you're not going to be devoid of any artistry.
Preserve your artistic integrity.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it is definitely a delicate balance.
I think that's what the film did a good job of on a macro level. I think it represented that pretty well.
Well, already, I think that's everything. Unless anybody else had any other points, I think. That pretty much concludes this episode of Phantom of the Paradise. Any final thoughts, Andrew?
You know what? I like this De Palma movie, so.
More than you can say for Scarface.
Kudos.
What other De Palma films, just out of curiosity, have you actually seen?
You know, name some.
This one.
Oh, why? Untouchables. Have you seen Untouchables?
No.
Have you seen the first Mission Impossible?
I could barely remember it.
Do you remember
I'm
when he comes
sure
down on the rope and he's like,
dude, I remember Mission Impossible, but it's been so... No, actually, you know what? I don't think I've seen the first Mission Impossible.
You don't remember the gum?
Oh. I remember the scenes, but that's just because pop culture. Okay. So, okay. Yeah.
He also did Carrie, the original.
Yeah.
I've never seen the original Carrie.
Okay.
So, not a lot of his movies. All right, then. Is what I'm going
to...
Well,
to be honest, I've only seen four. Now five.
Now five.
Well, my impression of him then was Scarface... Which I will say,
which, like I said, that's what everybody knows him for. That's what the public is like. Oh, Scarface, and then
so he's got
maybe Carrie too, and then it's like
in my eyes, he's got one supremely overrated film, and then now an underrated film. So I guess he's balancing out. I don't know.
And Jack and I definitely think we disagree.
Oh yeah, Scarface,
to say the least. Andrew got enough of the Scarfaces in this movie.
Okay, let's move on.
Alex, what was your final summary, I guess, of this crazy shenanigans?
I liked it. That's a shout out to Paul Verhoeven's RoboCop.
Nice.
If you remember that scene where they got the big gun and he's shooting, he's like, I like it. I definitely like this film. It was great. I think for its time, it was really good.
Yeah.
And I think... as time moves on and we get to know more things about the music industry and the movie industry and industries in general, like people like us, we can pick up on what the filmmakers are saying pretty quickly. But at that time, maybe they didn't. Maybe they just took it for what it was instead of a critique of the music industry. I don't know. But there was one thing when Winslow was signing Swan's contract and then Swan was playing back that audio and listening to it. At one point, Swan says, "Excellent," just like Mr. Burns did in The Simpsons. So I think that's where they got Mr. Burns' "excellent" from.
Excellent. It's a good theory.
It's not bad.
So I wanted to say, was the film predicting stuff, or, like Jack had said, or were various artists drawing from that film and building off of that? So I think the artists were seeing that film and taking things from it and making it their own and expanding on it rather than the film predicting stuff. But who am I to say?
I think it's a bit of a both. I think you can take, you know, it's all subjective with each artist, I think. So I think you can make the argument for both sides, I think, completely,
Hard to say.
It is hard to say. You would have to ask. You would have to go up like, hey, did you ever
Famine the
Did you see this movie?
Yeah, back in the day, like, in where was it in your art circle? Like, you know what I mean? Because it didn't make a lot of money, and it wasn't a high budget either.
No.
You know, so it was like $1.3 million. I guess for back then,
that's pretty
higher,
okay. That's still pretty good.
It's good for what they were filming.
Oh, no, yeah. for a budget like that, and that's what they did with it. Kudos to them.
Yeah, but so I guess I mean the mic's already on you. What do you think of this whole thing?
Overall, I think it is a good movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm on the fence of whether or not it's underrated. I do think it should be seen. Mm-hmm. I think it's better seen with a crowd.
I agree with that. Like, I wish we had seen this in theaters. And the fact that it's playing today in theaters is kind of a crime.
Yeah, there's,
but it just didn't work out.
Local theater playing it out, but oh well, what can you do?
Yeah, hopefully next time. Yeah. That is one to see in theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely, if you're a fan of, like, this kind of musicals or this kind of music or this kind of films that are just outrageous, you know, if you're looking for something, you know, if you've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show like 100 million times, you just want to watch something a little different, I definitely would recommend checking this out. But, you know, like I admitted, I'm a minority in the songs. That's perfectly fine. I didn't say they were bad. Like I said, I thought they were just a little meh for me. But overall, this was a pretty neat experience. So, I would say check it out.
And Ryland, what do you think?
I think, this movie is a lot of fun. There's lots to see. There's lots to hear. There's some nice little over-the-top commentary about the chewy up and spitchy out nature of the entertainment industry. Something for everyone. So, yeah, definitely. Definitely check it out. And I would think it would be a good theater experience as well. Particularly all that... All the cinematography and all those colors all splashed over the huge screen.
I'm curious if they have games for this or what. is this like Rocky Horror where like people participate or
in
something?
In Winnipeg, probably.
I think they actually might. Honestly.
Like, do you have people who are like so? Because I can imagine Beef has like a cult following on his own.
Just on his own.
People are like coming to the theater as Beef, or like when he goes or whatever. They're like doing the same shit, like something to respond to it.
It is. It definitely is the case. Because like I said, for the people who. You know, caught it and we're wondering like why the hell is this not bigger, you know, they tend to do that. It's like, well shit, I'm gonna go out in costume and stuff then. I mean, if it's playing in theaters, which it never does, you know, well shit, I'm gonna go. And then of course Winnipeg, you times that by a million, you know, they're like fanatics over this thing. So
Winnipeg's a pretty bit like populated city, so
yeah, but like they go pretty,
like I'm sure that they probably, yeah, I mean they could make it big, right?
Well, the fact that like most places, like I think I was reading like it was in theaters for like a week, 2 weeks, and then Winnipeg had played a year and a half.
That's insane.
Longer than Titanic was in screens throughout its entire theatrical run.
That was longer than Avatar ran in theaters.
Yeah,
like to be fair, insane. It was non-consecutive. It wasn't like every day.
Even
it was
with
there,
returns,
but
though,
still,
I think it still beats like an Avatar and Titanic, which are like top grossing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's insane.
If it's there for that long, that's insane.
It's just that city, just like, you know. Kind of understood at the time, they like kind of got it and were like, yeah, this is great.
Such a weird, like, why did it connect with Winnipeg?
It's very strange.
Winnipeg took the DMT.
Who's our resident like Winnipeg person? Scott. Like, Scott, right?
Yeah, fucking Scott.
We should
have
called. We should call Scott at some point and just say, explain this.
Why Phantom?
Because we know you from there, so you know about this.
Next time he goes over, we can get him to do a little covert ops for us and see if we can get to the bottom of it.
He has a cosplay costume of the Phantom. He's been hiding that. And
I've been waiting for this
moment. He's been waiting for it.
Yeah, he's already got like gear in his. He's got costumes in his closet. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I bring these everywhere.
He's
with
got
me.
A silver grill, just sweating in the.
This one's a little worn out, guys. But let me pick this one. You know, this one's a little more. You know.
Oh,
polished.
That's so great.
But anyways, yeah, that was latest episode Phantom of the Paradise. You know, if you like phantoms, go see it. If you like birds. Go see it, and if you like meat, you know, especially beef, go see this movie.
Yeah, don't see this movie if you're a vegetarian.
Indeed.
And be sure to make sure you like us on Facebook, Twitter, and all that jazz. Share us. We'd like people listening to us.
Or you could just mail Jack an envelope, too.
Yeah. No, we're pretty vain. Like,
anybody wants
Jack
to send
says.
A mail? I'm sorry.
I'm going to call the cops every time I get a random envelope in my mail and I don't know who it's from because you don't know what's in it, man.
I'm going to send you random envelopes. Yeah.
Thanks, Andrew.
That sounds like a... Why have we not done that before? That sounds like a lot of fun. Because
who delivers envelopes anymore?
Just us, like, writing, like, letters.
Oh, yeah. It's good to take
You only need one person to think it's anthrax before you have a shit show on your hands.
Sure. Sure.
Pretty much.
But anyways, yeah, that was the episode, and I guess it's Andrew's pick next time. Yep. So that should
Moon.
Be fun. Yeah, we're seeing
there
Moon.
You go.
So
picked.
I've seen it before. I saw that in theaters, and it was spacey. And Kevin Spacey is actually the voice in that movie. Kevin. So there you go.
Well,
he
hold
got
on.
Double.
Let's leave Spacey out of it.
Yeah,
for now.
Fair enough. But he is the voice in it. And there's
let's
you can
do focus about that. On Sam Rockwell, who pretty much runs that movie.
You're right. Actually, so, it is a one man show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. Stay tuned, kids.
Stay tuned for the movie.